Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to another episode of the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I am a writer, reporter, editor for ArizonaSports.com. Also cover the Phoenix Suns with my pal, Kevin Zimmerman, who is sitting alongside me. Kevin, the last time we podcasted, the Suns had a successful East Coast trip. They went 3-2. It was the first time in a long time they had a road trip where they had a winning record on it. We were cautiously optimistic. So we were optimistic, but at the same time, we were cautious, and I think these last four games have told us that the Suns have lost four in a row, but it's not a simple thing to discuss, and we're going to kind of get into that. I think it's a lot more than just playing good teams, but it's also a lot more than losing four in a row.
We did a good job not stomping on everyone's dreams about them playing better, because they did play better, but there were obvious flaws and things that they weren't doing great that you know is going to bite them. You knew was going to bite them in this stretch that we're in the middle of right now, where they played pretty good teams. But yeah, East Coast road trip means you're playing teams on the East Coast, which if you're not playing the Raptors right now, that's helpful. And that's where we're at right now. Let's see, what day is it? It's Thursday. They just lost to the 76ers. That was not a good showing.
It was awful. Yeah, their worst pattern right now, their worst habit is they have these stretches, whether it's a full quarter or shorter, where they completely collapse and play terrible basketball. And we're seeing that good teams, no matter how shorthanded they are going to take care of it. So they lost to Oklahoma City last Friday. That was the fourth quarter where I believe they were outscored 37-17.
That was a good game up to then.
It was a good game up to then. They were okay. I wasn't blown away by them. I didn't think they were playing their best basketball by any means, but they were fine. They were hanging around. Oklahoma State did not have Paul George. The Denver game, that was another bad first quarter where the game was pretty much over quickly, and then they made a really great comeback in the fourth quarter. We'll get into those comebacks in a bit. But Denver did not have Gary Harris. They did not have Will Barton. That was Paul Millsap's first game back, so he didn't play and have an impact that much at all, and Jamal Murray was hurt, but he didn't play like it. He scored 45, I want to say. And then Golden State, they were actually in the game, and then I believe it was a 27-5 run. There was some crazy run to end the first half, and then all of a sudden the Suns were down 18, and we're like, oh, this game's over, and they lost by 23 in that one. Golden State was full strength, and that's just, after the game, Igor was like, we have to be realistic. We have three rookies. We can't expect to, I think he was basically trying to say we can't expect for them to compete every night, which isn't a good thing.
I'll give you a flyer I'll give you a flyer on the Warriors every time.
Yeah, I think that's what he was trying to say. Yeah. Like after that game specifically, he reiterated time and time during shoot around and pregame that they have three Hall of Famers, they're the best team in the world right now, and he's right. The Sixers were next. That was on Wednesday, and that was their worst performance so far. They gave up 44 points in the first quarter. And I don't care if Joel Embiid is the greatest center to ever live ever. Giving up a 22-point, 10-rebound double-double to someone in 12 minutes of their play is pretty inexcusable, and also is giving up 44 points in any quarter. Again, we saw a spirited comeback in the late third quarter. Early fourth quarter, the Sixers did not have Jimmy Butler or Wilson Chandler, and they were on the second game of a back-to-back. So that really looked like a game to me where they could actually, I wouldn't say they were favored by any means, but they had a real chance to win that game, and they came out. And again, with these, the pattern I'm getting to here is poor whole first quarter. They did it in Denver, horrible fourth quarter against Oklahoma City, and Golden State, they had that five-minute stretch, and that's all it takes against Golden State to lose.
Yeah, and that's part of it is young team stuff, but we need to look at how they played on that East Coast road trip. And to my remembering back only a week ago, which is hard for me, is that didn't happen as much. You didn't see the lapses, and you didn't see, okay, we're down 12 because we've played poorly, but a few minutes of lost focus and it's going to be 24, which I think, what, early in the quarter last night against the Sixers, they weren't playing well at all. They were fouling. Their defense wasn't great. but they were hanging in there, and it's like, all right, well, we've seen the runs you can go on. You've proven that you're a team that can go on these runs. You at least have the firepower and the effort sometimes to do that. But when you combine bad play and then you have a couple minutes of lapsing against a team that has two really good players who are putting you in foul trouble, by the way, then you're really not going to expect to come back, even though they probably were tired and they thought they had that game in the bag late.
Over the last 10 games, the Suns are now 25th in defensive rating, 113.9. So even with some of those games that they won, they've still been a pretty awful defensive team over the last 10 games, but they're still top 15 in offensive rating and still respectable in some statistics like assist to turnover ratio and rebounding percentage and things like that, some things that they've struggled with throughout the season. So I think they're definitely improving, but I think the main, what I noticed, I think there's a couple ways to go. The first thing that I've noticed is that Melton and Bridges have hit a wall. I just think it's, I don't really know what it is, but I think it's failing to, they're having not Dragan Bender-esque, but when Dragan Bender would have those 9-minute stretches where he would do three good things defensively, but he would do one or two really dumb things offensively and it would neutral each other out, and then it wound up he really wasn't affecting the game that much. I think they're having those, but to a lesser extent, of course, because of the defense they're playing.
Yeah.
But with that being said, defensively, they're also learning a lot. They're a step in the wrong direction on rotations, and it's just one of those reminders again that Bridges is a guy that doesn't play like a rookie, but he's a rookie. And then I think Ayton, all the time, people just forget that he's a rookie because of the expectations that he has. It's a hard dilemma there, and keeping his expectations high, but also reminding yourself that he's a rookie. And then Melton is, I mean, a second-round pick rookie point guard, which is what I've been saying about him and Okobo the whole time, is you can't have expectations for those guys. And I think having those two guys in the starting lineup and having a key role in this rotation, and then you go to the bench where you don't really have any depth at all. You have a little bit with the addition of Oubre, but I mean, you can't expect Rashawn Holmes and Josh Jackson to swing every single game for you. And they did it. Josh did it again last night, too. He nearly swung that game, not on his own. Eli Okobo and Troy Daniels hit some threes, but he continues to be one of the best plus-minus players for this team, despite his statistics. I believe he shot 37% in December when I looked that up, and he still was the team's leader in net rating for the month. So you just can't expect them to swing all those games, and Booker still figuring out his rhythm. Where do you peg this kind of that where they're at right now, I guess, because it seems like they're still finding their footing when it feels like they already found their footing. It's weird. It's this weird spot.
I think if you look at ebbs and flows, at the beginning of the season, they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
They didn't know their rotations even. I think the East Coast road trip was like, okay, here's our rotation. Other teams are adjusting to that. Other teams are taking them maybe more seriously, but yeah, with Melton and Bridges, those guys are huge. We've talked about them a million times, how important I think they are. And they're important, but they're still not. They're still rookies, like you just said. So I think we're at that point where everything's settled in. They had a bout of success. And now it's back to how can we be consistent? Because I don't think young teams are ever going to be super consistent. I don't care. Look, you had the Boston Celtics last year. You have guys like Tatum, but he's surrounded by these role players slash vets slash Kyrie Irving for most of the season. He and Donovan Mitchell, I always go back to them because that's kind of a point of how young players who are good on good teams are. They're struggling this year because, to me, it's the same thing with guys who are less good, like Melton and Bridges, where that's just how it goes when you're younger. So I think we're at that point. I think what's really going to pull them out of that is, honestly, Booker and Ayton. I think those guys have to be better. I think TJ Warren can't, you know, he was lost for most of that game. And again, like, you have 1, 2, 3 of Booker, let's say Booker, Jackson, Bridges, TJ, Rashawn. Three of those guys at least have to have good games each night to even compete. And maybe Ayton wasn't that guy last night, and they still had three, and I guess maybe you need four. I don't know. It's just going to be tough. Consistency, yes.
I don't really think there's anywhere else we have to really talk about this. They're a young team figuring themselves out, and just when you think these teams hit a run, they have bouts of inconsistency because they're very young. Somehow this isn't the youngest roster in the league. I looked that up the other day, and it somehow isn't, but you have to look across their entire rotation, and I think 39-year-old Jamal Crawford is boosting the stats up a bit or something.
He hasn't played that much. He was playing well, and is it? Mm-hmm. I think it's still his knee where he's splitting with Okobo as a backup, kind of. And
so last 10 games, leaders in minutes per game. You've got Booker, who's in his fourth year. TJ's in his sixth year, something like that. Mikkel's a rookie. DeAndre's a rookie. Oubre is in his fourth year. Josh Jackson's in his second year. Melton is a rookie. Jamal Crawford is in year 47. Rashawn Holmes is kind of tricky because he's in his fourth or fifth year, I believe, but this is his first year playing a legitimate rotation role for the entirety of the season, so it's a bit skewed. And then Eli Okobo, who's kind of not played here and there, is also a rookie as well. So there's not really, and the amount of guys on that roster that have experience winning, it's Oubre and Crawford, and that's it.
Yeah.
So it's just a really big jump to ask out of them. And I think what I wrote last night after the Sixers game was that, and it didn't mean to come off as like super negative, but it probably did, was that we looked at that as possibly the turning point, the 5-2 stretch as the turning point. But what it was really was just another high point on the roller coaster. And now we're going down again, and then we're going to go up again.
You need those.
But that's what a young team is. And it's still not a negative because that high point, at least you had the high point.
If you have one of those stretches a month, no matter what the wins are, then you're going to not be embarrassing. You're going to keep guys' attention. You're going to keep them improving and having the coaching staff listening to the coaching staff. So I think just winning in that regard is huge so that a young team doesn't just start tuning Igor out and that kind of thing.
I think one of the main takeaways I had from this stretch over the last like 10-15 games is something Booker talked about, which is they're playing these teams that have been together like quite a while. Like obviously there are key pieces that have moved in and out, but Washington, for example, that game that they lost, Beal and Wall and those guys have been together quite a while. They beat Dallas, who is still getting acclimated to Luka and DeAndre Jordan and Dennis Smith Jr. They beat the Knicks, who are just everywhere on the map when it comes to roster construction. They're without Porzingis, of course. Minnesota is a team still figuring out what they are after they traded Jimmy Butler. Boston was, I think, like the best win of that stretch, obviously, in a group that is. But that's still a really young team.
And a team that is also still trying to figure itself out with integrating guys who are hurt.
And then the Magic still can't figure out who their three best players are. It's been like 5 years with that same group, and they just can't figure out what they are. And then you go to Oklahoma City, where you got Russ and Steven Adams playing together. They know each other like the back of their hand, and a couple of those key players as well. For Denver, it's the same thing. And then Golden State, obviously, don't need to go any further. And Philly, yes, they're a young team that's only been together for a little bit, but their key players were in there. It was Simmons, Embiid, Redick. Those guys have been together long enough, played playoff games together. And that's really the difference for them this year, and where you can look at hopefully year three, year four of Booker and Ayton together, and it starts to become an advantage for this team.
The fact that you said the offensive number over this recent stretch is not that bad, and you've seen that. You've seen them grow. So that's the most promising. I don't care if it's like an average number. It's that they've figured out how to play together. And, you know, last night was not a great example of that because Booker was just doing everything and trying to draw fouls once they got behind and stuff. But, yeah, I think that's the positive you can take out of it.
Yeah, they were so bad during the opening of the season. They're still 28th in offensive and defensive rating. So just to kind of take it back to where they were recently. Current kind of things going on right now besides the team's play. There was all-star voting. Was there anything that you were at practice today? Was there anything from that really?
They practiced for the first time in like 10 days, I believe. Mm-hmm. And we just talked about fouling a lot. I'm going to write something on Devin Booker's actually really good at drawing fouls now, which is something that he just went to last night because he was just like, I need to get this team back in the game. You can argue if that like takes them more out of rhythm, but it's points, so they needed those.
Ayton actually said after the game the ball was stopping and he wasn't really getting in a rhythm, and he was struggling to get his momentum, and that was partially because Booker was establishing post position every 5 seconds. He's got that thing where he runs in a full sprint from the three-point line, takes one dribble, and throws up a shot with the body contact, and he draws the foul because it's not really a foul, but he knows exactly how to draw it, and the refs have to be aware of it, though. And now refs are already aware of it, which is a great thing, because Embiid, as Suns fans learned last night and they learned back in the original game, maybe has one of the most generous whistles in the league besides James Harden.
I think at some point earlier he was leading the entire league,
because when he does that little swim move and shoots the jumper with the KD thing, if your hands are just near him, it's a foul.
Yeah.
Because the refs are waiting for that foul, and he gets it so many times that they're just waiting to call it. So even if your hand doesn't touch him, but it's in the area, they call it. And Ayton just said after the game, like, there's nothing I can do about it, because if I'm, like, backing off and not being aggressive as a defender, I've already lost. So I'm just going to keep being aggressive.
There are things I bet you can do.
You can
buddy.
Kind of get your hand out of there, but I thought he did actually a pretty good job on Embiid. That's just what he's going to do to a rookie center in Rashawn Holmes. He's going to put 42 and 19 on him. All-star voting came out. Surprise.
I got this up.
Surprise for the second straight year in this was a thing last year as well. I remember the first batch came out and Lonzo Ball was ahead of Devin Booker, as were many other questionable.
Is Derrick Rose always in front
players?
Of everyone?
Probably.
Is he doing well? Like, his best game was like, what, 50 points and he was shooting like 39%? I hope the Derrick Rose haters come in and listen to this podcast. That'll be fun.
I don't care about Derrick Rose at all, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, he shouldn't be there, and then you see the competition. Book's ninth. Ball and Rose should not be up there. You can debate guys like maybe Lillard, maybe Klay Thompson would be the number one. Is DeRozan's probably having a good season, I'd bet, so not him. But yeah.
You could argue that maybe we could have expected Ayton to show up somewhere in there. Just number one overall pick. And
I actually am. Well, I want to see the extended list, because DeMarcus Cousins is 10 right now. He has just played a practice. So if that gets you 10th in the All-Star voting for front court Western Conference players, sign me up for that.
Do you think Book can be an All-Star? I think that's the conversation here.
No.
Can he make it? I don't think he can this year.
I don't think he can. Like, I'd have to look at the numbers, which we clearly haven't done. We can get into it later.
We have our finger on the pulse usually when it comes to, as to Suns Twitter, when it comes to Suns recognition nationwide. And we kind of learned from Ayton's huge burst that not really many people are paying attention to this team. And Matt Moore tweeted out a thing about a week ago in reference to Ayton specifically, that you just can't expect national people to pay attention to your team when they suck this much for that long. And that's what I've been saying for years. And so when Devin Booker is putting up 25 points and 7 assists, me and I believe it was Cody Cunningham were talking about it, and the amount of guys that have averaged 25 and 7 in a season period, like, and the guys that are doing it right now.
I remember Marbury was putting up 20 and 7 and it was a huge deal.
Yeah.
You can flash Oscar Robinson numbers.
Yeah, Evan Sidery from Bright Side of the Sun has been tweeting him out a couple of times. I believe the last time he tweeted it was LeBron, Harden, and Russ maybe that were averaging. I don't think Russ's scoring is that high.
I don't know.
It might be, but the amount of guys that are averaging at least 25 points and 7 assists a game, it's like 3 or 4 guys in the league, and that's just crazy insane numbers, and he's played 29 of the team's 39 games, so I think if he plays the rest of the year, I think the argument for him missing too many games is out the window.
Yeah.
But it just comes down to how he's viewed nationally, because I wrote the thing last year, and I'm not going to write it again this year, because I would just be copy and pasting, basically, to a lesser extent. It's actually a different argument this year.
Yeah.
Last year, it was his teammates suck, and look at what he's doing. This year, it's just look at what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because if you put his numbers side by side, and then you watch him for a couple of games and realize this is not just stat padding on a bad team by any means, he's legitimately this good, he should make it. He should be one of the 6 guards to make it. Is that how it works? I think it's 5 and 5, and then there's 2 wild cards or something like that.
If you make that argument, though, like, go look up Klay Thompson's numbers. Then he's there. Look, Derrick Rose isn't going to make it. Lonzo's.
You've got Harden. You've got Steph. You've got Dame. I think those three.
Russell has to. And then it's him and DeMar. But if we cut out Klay, then he's 6, if I'm mathing right.
Klay shouldn't make it.
No, right?
He made it, him and Draymond made it in the past years because this team is so amazing, they deserve all these All-Stars. They haven't been that amazing anymore. They clearly don't care about the regular season anymore, so why should we keep giving them All-Star nods? It's ridiculous.
That is a good point, just if you're talking about this is an All-Star game for fan votes, because we don't care to see this Warriors run out their team anyway. But yeah, I mean, I'm surprised he's even 9 on the fan voting. I think that's positive, even though that sounds weird, because, again, he's on a bad team. People don't, at least from our view, don't really respect him as much as they should. But people in the league do, and that's what's going to pull him up there and give him a chance. So, actually, yeah, I think he might have a chance.
So here,
I don't know, you have to tell me the numbers. But.
Yeah, so here are the numbers for Western. Oh, I have to do point guards first. So point guards, leading scorers, Harden, Curry, Lillard, we agree all of them can make it. Next up is Drew Holiday, and then there's Russell Westbrook. I think where the narrative juice is flowing right now, where it's not in Phoenix, is Mike Conley.
Oh, no, he's not going to make it over Book. No?
Mike Conley? Eh, he's never made it. He's a guy. He's one
true.
Of the great. Like he's never made it. This is the year we put him in, guys. Look at us.
We got to do it.
We're the coaches. We care about this stuff. Speaking of narrative juices, I think Sacramento dropping off a bit has killed off the
narrative
possibility.
Narrative juices is a weird phrase, but okay, continue.
Wait, why?
I don't know. It just sounds weird.
Juice? I got the juice.
I don't know.
You don't like the word juice? Does it?
No,
juice,
weird...
listeners, tweet us and give us your thoughts on juice, because juice is in my regular vocabulary, and if you don't like me saying juice, I'll stop saying juice, but the narrative juices are not flowing. I'm just messing with you now, I'm sorry. The narrative sparks are not flying out of Sacramento anymore.
You just use what you want to use, man. Just an observation on my part.
De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, maybe they were going to make it like 2 weeks ago, but I don't really think so. So I think Mike Conley is on the short list of guys that could. Drew Holiday, look, you got to get out of the cellar of the Western Conference right now, my guy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I love Drew, but.
You're playing with this guy named Anthony Davis. I'm sorry. You're not making my All-Star team. So I think those four, and people are going to argue like Russ shouldn't make it. Like, we're not going
to
go down.
We don't
like
even
that.
Need to try, because he will.
So, among shooting guards, Booker is first in scoring. Then it comes to DeMar DeRozan, who I think is on the short list. He's averaging less points per game, but they're winning more games. He's arguably the number one, number two there, depending on how he sacks up there. We don't have to worry about Donovan Mitchell. Oh, boy. Let's not go down that path. CJ McCollum is a name, I guess, that deserves to be out there, but I think that's like, if Portland was the number one seed right now and I think you can make the argument there, but his individual numbers just aren't there.
No.
And then you got Clay, Buddy Hield, Lou Williams, who, did he make it? There was a case for him last year because he didn't make it, though, but he had an insane like 6 week stretch to close out the stretch there, and there was a legitimate case for him, and that was where it was like I was pissed. I was like, you guys are going to talk about Lou Williams, and I loved Lou when he was playing out of his mind, and the numbers backed it up. But that was just like, you're not even going to bring up Devin Booker. I think he's going to get at least brought up this year in the conversation, which is a step forward.
I feel good about looking at this just right as we sit here, because this came out earlier today, and saying I actually think he might have a chance. If he continues this, he might have a chance.
And what's the one thing we've always talked about? We've talked about that the media perception of his reputation is not what it is around the league.
No.
Brett Brown talked about I put that in that story like 18 months ago.
Yeah. Every coach, player you ask about Devin Booker, they will go out of their way to say good things about how talented he is.
So just to close out the argument here, 25-7, the guys to average it this year, it's LeBron and James Harden. That's it. Going back, just looking back at past seasons, the names to do it, it keeps including Harden and James. Last year, Russell Westbrook did do it. 2 years ago, Russ, Harden, and Westbrook again. Russ, Harden, and LeBron again. Derrick Rose did it in 2010-11. Dwayne Wade did it in 2008-09. But it's a list of five guys that have done it in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
His numbers
are all Hall of Famers.
By the way, BT Dubs. And the crazy thing is, once you get past 2004-05, the list just completely drops off. Allen Iverson did it like four times during the twilights of his career, including 1 year in Denver. Shouts to him. But then the next season after 04, 05 is in 1990-91. Michael Adams. I do not know who that is. And then MJ, Larry Bird. Adams, I don't know if you've heard of like Michael Jordan and Jerry West and John Havlicek and Oscar Robertson, but those are some of the other guys too.
Is there another person whose name you do not know on that list?
Is there another person?
I'm just curious. Are you skipping people?
Archie Clark.
Oh, good job, Archie Clark.
Don't know who that is. I know who Tiny Archibald is.
Yeah.
Tiny Archibald was a hooper. No, that's pretty much the list. Yeah, two guys I don't know. Good for us. Good for us basketball heads.
Yeah.
So that's the case. It's pretty simple. His numbers are...
We just did it right there. We didn't expect to do this.
Yeah, his numbers are insane. It's going to continue probably. I don't really see his numbers dropping off, especially with the way he's played in the last week. I've noticed that the point book switch is kind of playing in rhythm, playing at his own speed. I believe it was the Minnesota game where he was clearly like not even pushing it above gear 3 or gear 4, and he just dominated the game anyway. It looks like he's going back to regular shooting guard Devin Booker, who's still going to playmake and stuff and make the right passes and get his assists up there. But yeah, man, there's got to be a case for him. I think one of us, we have to start this campaign and be like, hey, people who pay attention to this stuff, just to get the buzz out there, because I think the coaches know.
Yeah.
But just to get the buzz out there more that he deserves to be in the discussion.
He does.
He does, for sure.
What else is going on? Let's see. Clippers, Hornets, Kings up to finish this homestand. Those are the games I want to see, because last night against the Sixers was a little rough. They finally had a practice. They talked about it was just nice to get back to drilling and fundamentals, even though I just came from a season of Cardinals hearing that, and they fired their coach on that. But it feels good for this team because this is much more positive vibes for me, who has covered the Cardinals. But maybe I'm wrong, and I'll quickly find out. Kellen's like giving me weird eyes.
You excited for Cliff Kingsbury, dude? Adam Gase?
Yeah, kind of.
Is that how you say his name?
Gase?
Yeah.
Eh.
Well, to take it back to those three games, LA is a top five offense in the league. Charlotte has one player who can absolutely dismantle you in Kemba Walker, and the pace Sacramento plays at was a problem for the Suns the last time they played them and is going to be again. So they've had this practice, and those three names might not sound as intimidating as the Thunder, the Nuggets, the Warriors, the 76ers, but it's the same type of stuff that they've been dealing with in these past four games, to a lesser extent, but it's still the issues they've got. They've got Dallas, Denver, Indiana, Toronto, Charlotte, Minnesota. This is a pretty tough stretch for them, even going beyond those first four games at home.
What do you want to see? I just already go back to what I said earlier in consistency.
I think Book's like still two levels away from the actual level of play. Like his numbers actually don't reflect his level of play this year. I think 3-point shooting, obviously. Can he have a month? Can he shoot 38, 39, 40% from three? And I think that in and of itself will bring his numbers up even more.
Yeah.
I honestly think if he was playing the level of basketball I think he could have reached this year, and health had something to do with it, of course, and playing point guard has something to do with it as well, but I think he could be averaging 27, 28 a game right now, another assist a game probably, depending on who was playing next to him. But I'm looking at him and seeing if he can just have a huge month here. I know we just talked about him with All-Star, and you can say that has to do with it or whatever, but I just think that he has not played his best basketball this season, despite what the incredible numbers say. And I think he can reach that. And then, of course, Ayton's improvement. Is he going to hit a rookie wall? Is he going to keep going upward? Because he was just staring at the wall for the first 6 weeks of the season, and then he just exploded in the past couple of weeks here in terms of overall improvement.
He looks a lot better, even just from down to conditioning. He's not having those periods where it's like, oh, he looks gassed. I'll just add on to that. Wings, I want to see TJ Warren keep doing his thing, and I just want to watch Oubre and Jackson figure out how they're going to play, because Oubre's kind of come back down to earth after a great couple first games where you see where he is and what he can be better at. Jackson's just kind of everywhere. It's like, I don't know. He might do one good thing here, one bad thing here. Oubre's, you know what you're getting, but he could get better at, you know, getting tunnel vision, things like that.
I should have a Josh Jackson thing coming up soon. He's extremely fascinating, especially with the Oubre trade and him not really... He's still appears to have no idea what he is in this league besides energy guy, but being energy guy, turns out energy guy and relatively decent at defense is going a long way for him right now. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Review us as honestly as you can. 1 star, 5 star. Do what you feel, audience. Okay? I trust
everyone. That's the narrative juice.
What a note to edit on, Kevin Zimmerman. See you guys next time.